You are listening to the ICW Safety Sound Off audio series with your host, Andy Crossland.
Today, Rick Feinman, Vice President of ICW Insurance Group Risk Management Department, will answer questions based on two CDC studies on occupational heat fatalities. The first report covers 68 heat illness deaths from crop workers in the United States. The second one covers 20 heat illness deaths from indoor operations with significant heat exposures. Rick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You know, heat is a big factor nowadays for our workers. How does heat cause heat illness?
Well, when the body is exposed to excessive heat, it has to regulate that heat. It has to get rid of that excess heat to remain stable and keep your internal temperature normal. It does that by circulating the blood closer to the skin and allowing it to cool with the air, and by having you sweat and cool with evaporative cooling. The problem that occurs when the air temperature gets as warm as your body is now bringing the blood to the surface of the skin no longer cools the body. And if it's humid, evaporative cooling slows down, and as a result, your sweating no longer cools your body. When that happens and the body can't get rid of that excess heat quickly enough, it ends up storing that excess heat and raising the internal core temperature. As the body's core temperature rises, our heart rates increase, and as we continue to store excess heat, we start losing our ability to concentrate. We can have difficulty focusing on tasks. Ultimately, we can become sick, dehydrated, and if not controlled, it can result in an occupational fatality.
What are some of the factors that can affect heat illness?
There are several things that affect our susceptibility to heat illness. First and foremost is the air temperature and humidity levels. The hotter it is and the more humid it is, the more susceptible we are to heat illness because our bodies don't cool as well. In addition, there are things that heat us up. A common one is the sun, direct sun exposure, but other radiant exposures like molten metal, bakery ovens, furnaces, all produce heat that radiate out and cause additional heating of our bodies. When there's no air movement, our bodies have a harder time cooling, and that can contribute to our susceptibility. All of those are environmental conditions. In addition to those, we have personal conditions which can increase our susceptibility, things like weight, our own personal health conditions, and the type of work that we're doing can affect our susceptibility to heat illness. The harder that we work, the more likely it is that our bodies will not be able to keep us cool.
Wow, that's a lot of factors. So someone really needs to pay attention to these factors to make sure they don't get exposed to any kind of heat illness. What are some of the things that I can do to reduce the risk of heat illness for my employees?
Well, Andy, you are 100% right. There are a lot of things that you have to do to prevent your workers from suffering heat illness injuries. In order to make sure all of those things are being done, the most important thing is to develop a formal written heat illness program. A formal program clearly lays out what needs to be done, by whom, and when. It lays out what controls you need to do and when those controls need to be done. And most importantly, a good heat illness program trains your employees and supervisors in their responsibilities and what they're required to do to ensure their safety while working. A good heat illness program has several provisions. Access to water, ensuring that workers have good, cool water to drink whenever they need it is a critical component of a heat illness program. Access to a cooling area, a rest area, or a shaded area, depending on the exposures, is critical. One of the things that's required for you if you're managing a heat illness program is to determine when you implement the controls. And to do that, you either need to monitor the air temperature using what's called a wet bulb globe thermometer, or refer to heat index tables or the weather to identify times that you need to implement your high heat procedures. And high heat procedures should be formally laid out. There should be a formal policy. There should be clear responsibilities for employees, supervisors, and managers. There should be procedures for monitoring the temperature and a decision matrix on how to interpret those results and take action. There should be guidelines on how often employees need to rest depending on the temperature and their work effort levels. there should be procedures for acclimatizing new workers and returning workers to high heat environments. There needs to be rest areas identified. There needs to be water replacement schedules identified, and first aid and emergency response procedures should all be documented in your high heat procedures. Finally, employees and supervisors need to be trained on these written procedures for them to be effective.
So this is pretty comprehensive what needs to be done. Also, I know, including emergency response, so when paramedics or fire department or let's say a police officer gets there, all of a sudden he recognizes someone has a heat illness and they'll know exactly what's done and what they need to do to prepare to help that person. What are some of the acclimatization procedures that need to be done when the heat illness incident occurs?
Well, Andy, once more, you are 100% right. The first aid procedures that we have to follow after a heat illness are very strict. Unfortunately, once a person suffers from a heat stroke, even if we get them to a medical provider rapidly, they can still die. So when the CDC studied these high heat environments, both for crop workers and indoors, and they looked at some of the causes, one of the things they noted, and it was best explained in the study of indoor workers, of the 20 indoor workers that received citations during this study period, 13 of those were the result of a fatality. And of the 13 fatalities, almost 70% of the employees were in their first 3 days of employment. And even more important, four of the employees, or 31% of the fatalities, were from people in their first day of work. And this is because their bodies were not used to working in a high temperature environment. Acclimatization saves lives. It's the process of allowing somebody's body to gradually adapt to a high temperature environment. Whenever a potential exists for workers to be exposed to heat, employers should have some form of an acclimatization process. And there are a lot of physiological benefits to that. What happens when you acclimatize a worker is their sweat efficiency improves. They cool themselves better. In addition, their circulatory system stabilizes. Their heart doesn't beat as hard, as fast. It doesn't heat them as quickly. They are basically able to perform their work with a lower body core temperature and a lower heart rate. And as a result, they're more safe when they work in those high heat environments. So the CDC has actually recommended an acclimatization schedule for new workers. They say that if it's a brand new worker with no experience in that high heat environment, that they should work no more than 20% in that exposure in their first day, and you should add 20% a day, which means for the first week, they don't work a full day until their fifth day. By giving employees that amount of time, you allow their body to adjust to the heat, and you significantly reduce the risk of heat illness. And you can fill that downtime with other training needs. So of all of the controls that an employer can do to prevent a heat illness fatality, acclimatization may be the most important.
So it sounds like it's just getting your worker used to what their environment is and making sure that you do it step by step and as a progression.
Correct.
This comes to the end of today's audio series. I would again like to thank our guest, Rick Byman, for joining us, and you, our audience, for listening. For more information on controlling heat stress for indoor workers, you can attend the ICW Beat the Heat webinar coming in September. Look for our webinar event page on our Policyholder Center. Join us next time on our next Safety Sound Off audio series as we enhance our lives, protect our health, and help each other create a culture of safety.